This week, the Down and Nerdy Podcast is brought to you by Claritin D. And shout out to the folks at Claritin who not just sponsored the show, but also provided some samples as well. Tis the season to breathe pollen. Yeah, I've been spending a lot more time outside. Yeah, I can tell those allergies are definitely acting up. I feel stuffy. I feel sluggish. The eyes are starting to water a little bit more. That's why I'm turning to Claritin D. Look, it's definitely helped me relieve my symptoms. It seems to work really, really fast for me as well. It's designed for serious allergy sufferers. Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongestion in your nose so you can breathe better. And hey, I'm noticing a lot of that right now. As a matter of fact, I'm looking forward to be able to enjoy much more outdoor time this spring and summer. A lot of that has to do with Claritin D. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin clear. Use as directed.
Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's Journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's Journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Spanning the nerd world and feeding your fandom. It's time for the Down and Nerdy Podcast. Here's your host, James Witham.
And going off the grid means much more than having to just delete your Instagram profile. It's episode 421 of the Down and Nerdy Podcast. I'm James Witham. You might have heard that Eraser was being reborn, and that's right, Eraser Reborn going to be on Blu-ray and digital HD on Tuesday from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment. That's June the 7th, by the way. And I just happen to have Jackie Lai joining me this week, who's one of the stars of the movie, and she's got some really, really good insight on how this movie's been updated and how it makes sense for 2022 and modern audiences, and talking about some of the great action scenes that she gets to be a part of as well. So we'll dive into Eraser Reborn with her. And as far as reviews go, yep, you've been waiting for my review of Stranger Things Season 4, Volume 1. I'll be doing that with spoilers coming up. The first three episodes of The Boys premiering on Prime Video. You maybe haven't gotten a chance to see that yet, though, so I'll go spoiler-free on my review of that. Yeah, the Gotham Knights trailer, you've been talking about it on social media. I'll weigh in on that as well. Also going to be talking about The Princess from Hulu, Oni Thunder God's Tale from Netflix, which is something brand new that's going to be coming out. The Hunger Games prequel, adding another name to the cast. I'll talk about that. And a big shakeup at Warner Brothers Pictures. Going to talk about that on the show as well. Remember, if you like the show, if you love the show, make sure you're subscribing on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you like to listen to us. Make sure you're subscribing and tell a friend too. By the way, if you don't follow us on social media, at Down and Nerdy 757. I've been doing some giveaways on there, and that's for new and existing subscribers, by the way. So you just have to follow the instructions on how to enter, and if it's stuff that you already do, then all you have to just do is say, hey, I want to enter this, and that's just, and you get extra entries for already doing what I ask you to do on the post in the first place. So if you want some cool giveaways, did one for The Boys this week. Last week it was Stranger Things. And this week, oh, well, who knows what it's going to be. It'll be something good, though, something you want, that much I can tell you. Let's get the show started, though, shall we? Jackie Lai joins me next to talk about Eraser Reborn on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is Jessica Lucas from Gotham on Fox, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
You might remember a movie called Eraser from 1996. Well, guess what? It's back. Eraser Reborn kind of reinvents everything, and boy, does she have a big, big part in that. It's Jackie Lai. Jackie, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing very, very well. Now, this is, like I said, a reboot of the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie from 1996. Of course, Vanessa Williams was in that as well. It feels like it would be a lot harder, though, Jackie, to erase someone now with phones everywhere. You've got social media presence and things like that. So how do you feel like this movie updates the story for a modern world?
Well, exactly like what you're saying, social media is such a big presence in our day, in our day-to-day, that in order to erase somebody, we have to account for that. And then in order to fabricate a new person, we have to account for that as well. So it's crazy that nowadays, in order for someone to be real, you have to have a social media presence. So, you know, using technology and am I allowed to say this? I guess bots in the film, we were able to modernize the process of erasing someone.
It worked out really, really well, too. There was a lot of clever things in that, of course, where I can't talk about it either because I'm not going to spoil anything. But you also got to work with Dominic Sherwood a bit when you're both on Shadowhunters. And, of course, you guys starring together in this. So how excited were you to actually get a chance to work with him again?
Oh, I was so excited. I actually, as soon as I found out, I messaged him and I said, little birdie told me that you're going to be Pollard. And he's like, how did you know? Because I don't think he knew yet who they had chosen. But yeah, and then we kept each other updated along the way before actually meeting up in South Africa. So it was really nice. It's like a little catch up.
Have you guys actually gotten any response from like this, the Shadowhunters fandom that are already just excited for this thing just because you guys have that connection?
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of the Shadowhunter fans were really excited to know that we're coming back together. And we're so lucky. I mean, in some of my other projects too, a lot of the Shadowhunter actors that I've worked with are on the same show. And it's always really nice to be able to work with someone you've worked with before and know that you guys get along. And Shadowhunters has such an amazing fan base that we're lucky to have them and for them to follow us on all the journey to come.
Creates a really good chemistry too. And that's always a good thing when everybody's comfortable. Now, Jackie, Rena might be in trouble in this thing, but she's no damsel in distress either, which I really, really love. So how would you describe her to anybody that's coming into this thing fresh?
You know, I've used this a lot while I was prepping her, and I don't know if it makes any sense, but I feel like she's kind of a glamorized street rat in the sense that she looks...
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah.
She looks a certain way, but really deep down, she's lived on the streets. She's had to be resourceful with what was given to her and her circumstances and doing what she can and collecting what she can in order to be who she is and fight for what she believes in.
She's crafty too, which I really, really love. She's very, very clever. And you guys will see that when you watch this thing. Now, Jackie, the scenes where people get erased can actually be kind of intense. And you kind of expect that a little bit. What was it like to shoot that first scene where Rena gets erased and to like hear that classic line for the first time?
It was really cool, to be honest with you. I was like, Dom, you did it so well. It's amazing what they did. And as you saw in she was my stunt double, what they did to her face. I mean, to see that. And she was walking around set with it on. It was very creepy.
That's not weird at all. No.
I mean, they were contemplating working with a dummy, but instead they used a real person, which I find so much more fascinating to be able to have a real person play the part of a deceased person. It's just scarier. But yeah, that was really cool and really creepy.
No doubt about that. Even though he's trying to help her, Mason, what he's doing, it's pretty intense. And he has, you know, it's a little bit of a tough sell when you're saying, hey, I'm going to erase you and do all this stuff. How would you describe that relationship between the two of them in the early going? And maybe there's some trust issues there?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I'm trying to be careful with what I use because I can often give too much detail. Yeah, there's definitely trust issues. I can speak from my side, which is she doesn't trust anyone. I mean, there's people that come along and try to help her, and yet she's always hiding something from someone. So there's a lot of mind games going on to still get to her goal with all of the kind of spontaneous things that come along during her journey.
That made perfect sense. Once you see the movie, that will make perfect sense. She didn't spoil anything either. Talking to Jackie Lai from Eraser Reborn, which of course you can get on Blu-ray and of course digital HD as well on June the 7th. Now, Jackie, based on the trailer, it seems like it's not just one threat we got going on here, but two threats that they're running from as well. So how much are the odds really stacked against them? And which threat do you think is the more like pressing threat for Jackie? I mean, for Rena.
It's hard to say, because I think in her world, she's seen the worst from both sides, you know, from the legitimate and the illegitimate worlds. And so I think for her, everything is so real. It's hard to say that one or the other. And I think that's why she's always in such a self-preserving mentality, that she can't really trust anybody. Everything her entire life has been a threat.
Boy, is that such a good way to put it. There's some pretty solid action scenes in this thing here too, Jackie, which I really love, especially the end. Again, no spoilers, but wow. Okay, so did you get to do a lot of your own stunts? Is there any one in particular that was really cool for you that you got to do? Of course, tap dancing, not doing any spoilers here for that one.
Yeah, for sure. I love doing stunts. That's what I realized doing Shadowhunters as well as Eraser is I love getting into the fight mode. I like the way it feels. You know, you get to know the character better and the way that she moves and how it connects with you. We prepped to do everything. So every crazy thing that you saw, we were prepared to do it. I mean, even the crazy jumps, all of that. However, due to insurance reasons, there are things we weren't allowed to do. But I think one of the craziest things was in the last scene, as you've mentioned, there was some hanging done.
Oh, there's hanging. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hanging. And not and like not like chilling out on the couch watching Eraser Reborn kind of hanging. No.
Sure. And we weren't a step down from the ground. We were really hanging.
Yikes.
So that was really cool. To me, I love adrenaline, you know, things like that. So yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Jackie, before I let you go, obviously you never want to find yourself in this position in real life, right? Where you have to be erased or anything like that. But I can't help but think about this while I'm watching this. So if you were ever in that position and you couldn't contact anyone from your old life, you had to disappear, could you do it if you absolutely had to?
Definitely. I'm, you know, in terms of social media, it's not honestly my forte. I prefer to not be on it. So for me, that's easy. I'm not one to be on my phone very often either. I get a lot of slack for that as well. So personally, I think I definitely could. If this wasn't my, you know, career, I can definitely hide and you'll never find me.
Well, hopefully nobody will find you for at least an hour and a half while you're sitting down and watching Eraser Reborn. Make sure you're getting it on Blu-ray. If you want the physical copy, please do that on June the 7th. Also going to be available on digital HD as well from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment. And boy, the stuff that this woman does in this movie. I think you're really going to love Rena. It's Jackie Lai. Thank you so much for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. That was a wonderful interview, Jamie.
And it is really interesting how they actually updated this movie for today's world, because you absolutely had to do that, right, in order for this to even kind of make sense. And just like the original Eraser, this is one of those movies where you just got to sit back, enjoy the action, enjoy the chase, and I think you could really have fun with this one. And I think that Jackie's character is one, Rena, that you're really, really going to fall in love with when you're watching Eraser Reborn. And again, make sure you're getting that on Blu-ray on June the 7th, also digital HD as well. Again, thanks to Jackie Lai for joining me this week to talk about Eraser Reborn up next. Yep, it's a big week for reviews. We'll start out with The Boys Season 3 next on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
Hi, this is Sean Ryan.
And I'm Eric Kripke.
And we're the creators of Timeless on NBC, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
Time to find out who can be the good soldier. Season 3 of The Boys has now begun on Prime Video. Gonna do spoiler-free on this one. I know, but the first three episodes just dropped. I don't want to be the guy that spoils it for you. And yeah, it's going to be pretty difficult to not do this with spoilers. But one thing that I thought that they did really well in this coming season, in this season three to start things off, was what they did with Homelander's story. And you know from the trailers that, you know, Homelander is, you know, trying to walk back the whole relationship with Stormfront and the whole Nazi thing. And he's trying to, you know, clean up his image. And Vought has a new golden child of the seven, let's just say that. And that is making Homelander very, very uncomfortable and, you know, kind of making him crack a little bit, for the lack of a better way of putting it. But the way that they push that along in these first few episodes, and you'll get a pretty good idea of where the season's going to be going in these first few episodes if you haven't started to watch them already. I can tell you that much. But I'll say that the storyline with Homelander in this early going is very, very interesting. And I'll say the same thing about Starlight, too. Because remember, Huey's trying to do things the right way now, right? He's trying to do things through the government. He's trying to do things so that they're not... He's teamed up with Congresswoman Newman. He's teamed up with Victoria, and they're going to try and do things the right way and take down the Supes from the government side instead of going rogue with Butcher. And then Butcher, you see, is like kind of on the straight and narrow, right? He's, you know, the kid, he's promised that he's going to look after the kid. So we get to see him with the kid a little bit. And, you know, he's not really obsessing over Supes anymore, even though he's still doing the work, right? But there's a little bit of an interesting way of how he's doing that as well. So, but then you also see that, you know, he also becomes a Supe at some point, right? So you have to see how he's going to deal with that. We do get to see how he's going to deal with that in these first few episodes and what pushes him to want to do that in the first place. Something very, very specific pushes him to want to do that. And you could say that for a lot of the characters that you know and love from this group of the boys. Everybody has that thing that's pushing them to go kind of fall into old habits, is the best way that I can really put it without spoiling anything. So you get to see. And then I think that one thing you'd be surprised at is Kimiko's story in these first few episodes is a very interesting and almost heartbreaking one as well. You get to see some really good character work from Karen Fukuhara in these first few episodes that I think is really, really compelling for where this thing's going to go in this coming season, because obviously she's one of the key members of the group. And to kind of see her in a different way, you're going to see her in a different way a couple of times in these first few episodes, and it's going to make you wonder exactly, you know, how she's going to go about her business this season, quite frankly. Well, there's a couple of really big moments. Again, I'd really love to talk about this with spoilers, but I can't because it's too soon. One of them involves Starlight and Huey. There's a huge, huge moment with Starlight and Huey in these first few episodes. It kind of separately and together at the same time. There's some revelations that come about for Huey that really, really change things. And Starlight, maybe there's something that Starlight decides to do that also has some interesting consequences a little bit later on. And again, not going to spoil anything for you, but how that thing plays out, or even in these early episodes, is super interesting. And we find out something. There's something that we know about a certain character that nobody else knows. Okay? And I'm really trying to dance around this here. There's something we know that nobody else knows. And then you find something else out about this particular character. When you watch these episodes, I promise this will make sense. But when you also find out something else about this particular character that you didn't know either. Like, there's something that we know about this person that nobody else knows, but there's something that you haven't even found out yet. And when I saw it, I was like, oh my God, you've got to be kidding me. And you understand how that, you think it's a small moment, it's not, because it ends up changing everything about this season. Yes, we do get a little bit of Soldier Boy in this, and the very little bit that I've seen, Jensen Ackles does a great job as Soldier Boy, and hopefully we'll get a lot more of that coming up in future episodes. I think what's going to be happening with A-Train is really, really interesting too, because, you know, A-Train went through it last season, and how is he now that his powers aren't what they used to be? And what's going to be going on with Deep, I think you'll be very interested in as well. Because I got to tell you, It's always something that involves the deep that can make things feel uncomfortable. And there's certainly one moment in these first few that just made my skin crawl. Like really, really made my skin crawl. And again, there's a catalyst to that. There's a catalyst to a lot of the moments that make me cringe about this show. But that's the beauty of the storytelling of the show. That's not a criticism. That's one of the things that Eric Kripke and company are able to do, is they're trying to make us feel uncomfortable on purpose because it takes you out of your comfort zone. That's one of the brilliant things about this show, is to show superheroes in a different light and how they could be if superheroes were real, and imagine the horrors of how that could be. And there's a moment in the third episode, it's actually kind of the second into the third episode, involving Homelander, where it's that moment where you go, I was waiting for this to happen, and now that it has, all bets are off. And that is an incredible, and the way they pulled that off was really, really great. And we're going to find something out about Grace Mallory, too, that's going to surprise you a little bit. There are a lot of surprises in these first few episodes that you're not necessarily expecting. There's a couple that you are, not going to lie. There's a couple that you're going to be expecting, but there's also at least two, if not three, that you're not ready for. And it helps really define what this third season of The Boys is going to be. And the first three episodes now streaming on Prime Video. And I got to tell you, this is going to be maybe the craziest season yet, just because of the reveals we get in this first few episodes. And if I'm saying that, knowing what this show's already done over the first two seasons, if I'm saying this could be the craziest season ever, and I mean it, then you know that some weird, weird stuff and some crazy stuff is going to be going down. So give yourself enough time to be able to watch all three of these episodes back to back to back. I will tell you that much. Don't try and watch this in fragments. Try to block off a few hours to be able to watch these all the way from 1 to 3, because you're not going to want to stop watching, and you're going to be waiting for that next episode to come out the following week. I can tell you that much right now. That's going to do it for my spoiler-free review of The Boys Season 3, the first few episodes. Up next, hey, it's finally time to talk about Stranger Things. Guess what? This time we'll do it with spoilers. And it'll be next on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out the Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find the Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Hey guys, it's Jake Manley from Netflix's The Order, and you are listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
Fire up the Kate Bush and let's be superheroes. Season 4, Volume 1 of Stranger Things is in the books. My spoiler-filled review happening right now. Yeah, I wanted to wait until I could do this with spoilers because it's just more fun to talk about it that way. So that's what I'm going to do. So if you haven't finished it yet, you might want to skip ahead a little bit. I got to say, this isn't one of those times where I'm going to go through every single moment of the season. But I will say this, I knew how long the episodes were going to be, and I was actually kind of concerned I wouldn't be able to finish it in time to review it for you guys, I'll be honest. But it was such an easy and quick binge, I didn't notice that the episodes were as long as they were. And one of the reasons for that, I think, was how well they were able to balance all of the different stories that were going on here in such a good way. And every time they'd cut away from one story to the next, I didn't find myself drifting back to the other stories. Like when they cut to Hopper in the prison, I didn't find myself drifting to, well, what's happening with Eddie? What's happening with Dustin? What's happening with Mike and Elle? I wasn't drifting to any of that stuff. I was in whatever moment that I was being placed in. And given the fact that they had so many different stories going on here, that says a lot. So to be able to keep my interest throughout each of these stories, even though they kind of all came together in various parts of these first 7 episodes, I think that the way that they were able to balance it was really, really great. And I've got to say, and again, I'm going to be bouncing around a lot here, so just buckle up for that. Sadie Sink, right off the bat, I got to single her out because Max was such an amazing character this season. I loved Max last season too, but Sadie Sink just takes it to another level in this season. And Dear Billy, episode 4. Yeah, that episode, that was the one I saw the most on social media while I was trying to avoid spoilers, was once you get to episode 4, look out. And I got to tell you, episode 4, big time, lived up to the hype, and Sadie Sink was a major reason for that. And then you've got to bring Lucas in there. You've got to bring Dustin in there as well. And just the way that they helped, the way that they helped her. And Steve, just every time, every season, I've loved Steve more and more and more. And you kind of remember hating him in season 1. You remember that? I do. And I feel bad for it now. I'm actually mad at myself for hating him in season 1. They did a good job at making us kind of hate him in season 1. But boy, is that character come a long way. I'm going to say the same thing about Erica Sinclair, too, because she annoyed the hell out of me so many times when I was watching Stranger Things over the years. And now it's like, I love this girl, right? Like, she's got that spirit that she has. Her smartassery is just off the charts, but it's now like it's being used for good instead of evil kind of thing. And when she was in Hellfire and they were playing D&D and she was right in there with Dustin, I was loving it. And then you see how she's smarter than they've given her credit for over the years. There's no question about that. We actually get to see her in the mix towards the end of the season, and I really thought that was amazing. So those two characters in particular, it's three because we want to throw Max in there, I really enjoyed throughout this season. And it was a little uncomfortable, honestly, seeing Eleven as Jane and seeing her struggle with being bullied and things like that. You know, obviously that spoke to me as somebody who's been bullied in my life. It spoke to me. And to see her powerless like that, not just losing her actual powers, but powerless in the fact that there was nothing that she could do. And if you've ever felt that in your life, I think you felt Millie Bobby Brown in those moments as Jane and even as Elle outside of that. I think you felt those moments. And then when she smacks that girl on the head with that roller skate, it's almost like this thing triggered in her, and you never want to see anybody have to get to that level, right? You really don't. And then that sort of springboards into the people that are looking for her, and everything's starting to either fall apart or come together. That's kind of the way that you need to interpret that your own way. Because when Owen shows up, you're thinking, okay, is this a good thing or a bad thing? When you see Brenner, you're automatically, your caution light goes on. I know mine did. And I still was like keeping my eye on it the entire time. Although I will say that during the Nina project, I kind of figured out that sequence of secrets that we got revealed in that last episode. I kind of had that figured out already. I think that they dropped some good enough hints that, you follow the breadcrumbs and you kind of find out that, biggest spoiler of this review, that one is Vecna. Yeah, I think that you kind of were able to get there, or at least one being responsible for killing everyone, that I didn't necessarily have, but I had kind of connected the dots up to that point. And that really sets up a great final showdown between Vecna and Eleven coming up in the second volume. You assume, anyway, that that's what's going to happen. But, and again, the relationship, too, between Eleven and Mike, I thought was an interesting one, because, her being alone extended beyond just her being miles away from him. It was the wording in the letters. And again, yeah, be real careful with making sure you say how you feel, if that's how you feel. And that is something that was abundantly clear when it was concerned with their relationship. And then you could almost put that into the consideration for Hopper and Joyce as well, right? There's a lot left unsaid there, but look at the lengths that Joyce was willing to go to get to Hopper. I mean, the way that whole sequence worked out was incredible to me. I loved watching that whole thing come to pass. And the fact that she just kind of left the kids there was obviously, they're older kids, and she feels like they could take care of themselves in a certain regard. But the fact that she was willing to leave Will after everything that Will's been going through, that should tell you all that you need to know right there. That's how strongly she feels for Hopper. And well, obviously, she wants to help him. Sure. That's another kind of given. But the way that she was able to do that was just incredible. And that whole trip to Russia, that was a fun sequence. Tense, sure, but it was a fun sequence as well. And the way that things played out with Mike and Will and Jonathan and their little journey to Utah, that was fun. So it wasn't just all serious. There were some fun moments in there as well. I thought they did a great job at propping Vecna up as the baddest villain that they've had so far, and the way that they kind of connected the dots to the Mind Flayer and how things relate to the Upside Down and where the gates are and how they come to pass as well. I thought that was really neat. And the whole Victor Creel story, connecting this Creel house and the Creel family to this, that was genuine spooky stuff. The way they really leaned into the horror really well in this first half of the fourth season in a way that I don't think they have in a long time, quite frankly. So they were able to have a little fun, but at the same time, they were also really able to lean into that horror aspect and just seeing the brutal nature of what Vecna is capable of. And then you bring Barb back into the whole thing, right? Because, of course, Vecna is preying on people who have done bad things or have that, the deep-seated guilt or something that's been eating away at them. That's how he sort of chooses his victims. And you find out that that's what happened to Barb all along, all those years ago. It wasn't like a Demogorgon or anything like that. No. It was Vecna all along, going all the way back to season one. So that was, and now, again, one of our cliffhangers is what's going to happen with Nancy, right? So that's one thing that we've got to think about heading into to the second volume of season four, and on top of a whole bunch of other things. But I loved the developing friendship between Nancy and Robin. I thought was a lot of fun. I really loved that. Eddie Munson, I don't know how you don't love Eddie. I think that, you know, that's a character that I wish we'd have gotten a little bit sooner. Wouldn't have made sense if we did, of course. But if we'd have gotten him sooner, I would have loved to enjoy Eddie's character a little bit longer. The fractured relationship between the core group of the boys, I thought it was something that's a coming of age thing that just sort of happens to groups of friends as you get older, right? And then how they started to grow apart, and maybe they're going to start to slowly come back together again. We sort of see that with Lucas and Dustin and that group as well. But, you know, how's that? And you saw the relationship between Mike and Will and how they kind of drifted too. That just sort of happens with boys as you get older. So I thought that was a nice true to life part of this story. There's so many loose ends that need to be tied up. And you understand why these final two episodes are going to be as long as they are. But I got to say, overall, again, the way they were able to balance this thing, and you gave us the camaraderie between the group, you gave us the chemistry between these characters that we know and love, the way you introduced the newer characters I thought was great. The fact that now the government is after Elle adds an extra added element of difficulty for how they're going to solve this problem of Vecna and the Upside Down, and can they solve it? Ultimately, you feel like they're going to, but at the same time, they've created a genuine sense of doubt here as to whether or not they're actually going to be able to pull this off. And I think we're going to be losing some people in these final couple episodes. I don't like it any more than you do, and I don't know that I can name names here, but I think we're going to be losing some people, some characters that we really love in these upcoming final couple of episodes that are going to be coming up on July the 1st. And it's scary, man, because this is a show that really, you know, maybe wasn't as good as it was in the first season, in 2 or 3, even though I enjoyed them both. This fourth season shows you why we fell in love with the show in the first place. Certainly why I fell in love with it in the first place, and what they were able to do to kind of, I think, recapture the magic of the first season in such an advanced way, the way that they've brought these characters up these last several years. I thought that a masterful job by the Duffer Brothers and company, everybody that worked on Stranger Things season 4. And yes, the end is near, but it's going to be a big one. That's going to do it for my spoiler-filled review of Stranger Things season 4, volume 1. Up next, as if that's not enough, there's still some nerd news to get to. Let's do it. I'm James Witham, and this is the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is Brittany Ishibashi from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
When you add a rising star to your cast, the odds are definitely in your favor. It's time for nerd news, and I actually want to start off with the Hunger Games prequel, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, the new movie adaptation going to be coming in 2023. And a big casting announcement was just made this past week. Rachel Zegler going to be joining the cast. Of course, Tom Blythe is already going to be playing a young Cornelius Snow in this movie. And then you also have Rachel Zegler, who is going to be playing Lucy Gray Baird. Now, if you're not familiar with the book, here's the deal. This is why this character is so important, because herein lies the intrigue for the story. If you were wondering why you should care about an 18-year-old Snow before he becomes the tyrannical president of Pan Am, here's the thing. Apparently, Baird is the female tribute from District 12. Now, this is right after the war, and she is being mentored by Snow for the Hunger Games. She sang at the reaping ceremony, and Snow's like, okay, hold on, this could actually put the odds in your favor. You know, no pun intended there. And this turns into, you know, some showmanship, some political savvy that are going to be combined here between the two of them. And anytime you're talking about the Hunger Games, it's a race against time. But you're also going to find out, they say, who's the songbird and who's the snake? Well, if one of them is a good singer and the other one is someone we know that grows up to be a tyrant, what do you think? But how they get there and how they navigate the games, which I think, you know, should be at least kind of part of this movie, right? then that is where, to me, the intrigue really lies in this thing. And you've got to be excited when you've got somebody like Rachel Zegler that joins your cast. I mean, Tom Blythe is still an up-and-comer. Rachel Zegler is as well, but being in West Side Story with Steven Spielberg kind of puts her on another level just because of that notoriety that that movie's gotten. You combine these two, and if they've got a good chemistry, then all of the sudden, this movie goes from something where you're, we're not sure, to once again having the Hunger Games be the juggernaut that it always was. This franchise has made billions of dollars across the world. You didn't think they were just going to let it alone, did you? Well, now we have until November of 2023 to find out whether or not this is going to be any good or not. And could this springboard another billions of dollars for the Hunger Games franchise? And think about it. This whole thing started with some very unknown names in the cast. And then all of a sudden, you've got these characters that are household names. And Jennifer Lawrence being Katniss Everdeen. It was about the chemistry of that cast. The writing had something to do with it too. Suzanne Collins gave the team a good base to work with. But it was the chemistry between the cast members that really, really sold it. Jennifer Lawrence and Josh Hutcherson and company. That is what really sold this franchise to fans. There were already people that loved the book, but at the same time, if you don't pick the right people to play these characters, then it doesn't matter. So bringing that to life on the screen is of utmost importance. And when you get, again, a couple of up-and-comers here, you have to trust that everybody knows what they're doing based on past experience, right? Or do you kind of worry because it's been a while and maybe the shine's off it a little bit? Well, before you feel that way, remember we just talked about Avatar and the Avatar sequel that's, you know, decades later and how popular that is still with fans, that first trailer breaking records. I can't imagine people are just going to forget about the Hunger Games and throw it up on a shelf, whether you've been a fan of the books for a while or not. I think there's plenty of people that are still pretty, you know, that have been waiting for this. And the book's been out for 2 years as well. So that's been able to certainly gain its own amount of popularity. So it looks like they're off to a pretty good start as far as casting is concerned. Again, we'll have to wait until November 17th, 2023 to find out what Lionsgate has in store for us with The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. It was another pretty good week for trailers this week, and one of them that's still being talked about right now is for the CW series Gotham Knights, which, again, not going to be coming out until 2023. It's funny that we didn't get this trailer during the upfronts. There had to be kind of a reason for that. But once I saw this trailer for the first time, and there's a lot of fans that are very upset about this trailer. Yeah, it does have a little bit of a Riverdale vibe, I'll be honest. Of course, you know, in Gotham Knights, Bruce Wayne is dead, and that's just kind of thrown the entire city of Gotham into a tailspin. And then you have his adopted ward, Turner Hayes, who's kind of being accused of killing his dad. And then you've also got the group of Harper Row and Cullen Row, and you've also got Dwella Dent that is a part of this. They're all kind of being accused of murdering Bruce Wayne, but surprise, surprise, the trailer shows us that, yeah, the Gotham PD very much involved in this whole thing and looking to cover it up. So how are they going to clear their name, one? And two, how are they going to protect Gotham? Because Carrie Kelly apparently is our Robin in this scenario. And I got to say, I'm still definitely concerned myself after seeing this trailer because things seem to be a little bit all over the place, if I'm being honest. It just didn't feel like there was a whole lot of cohesion here. But Navia Robinson, who plays Carrie Kelly, really, really stood out to me in this trailer. She's very likable. She's smart. She's got some skills. Obviously, that chemistry that she has with Oscar Morgan, who plays Turner Hayes, I think is very, very evident in this trailer. And, obviously there's some fun to be had here. You've got Olivia Rose Keegan, who plays Duella, It looks like she's going to be the fun one of the group. Harper Row seems like she's every bit as fierce as she is in the comics and very protective of Cullen, too, which, again, is not going to surprise anyone who knows Bluebird and Harper Row from the comics. And then you've got Misha Collins as Harvey Dent, and you can't really get a beat on him from this trailer, right? It seems like he's sympathetic to what Turner's going through, but isn't it like a mock sympathetic? Is he trying to hide something? Of course, it seems like he probably is, just based on, again, the fact of what Harvey Dent becomes eventually. But, you know, you don't know how this timeline's going to play out. Because, again, it's the CW. They take liberties with the comics source material. No question about that. And you know what? Here's the deal, though. If you're already kind of saying that this isn't for you based on one trailer, and that's kind of a shame, because I feel like this is one you've got to let it play out past the pilot, too. I don't think you could judge this even just based on the pilot. Obviously, it's going to be a while before we're going to be able to see that. But I think that this is one that you're going to have to give it a couple of episodes to see how it's going to play out. We've also got Stephanie Brown that's going to be a part of this as well, and she's kind of very good friends with Turner, so she's already established in this world as well. And eventually, you know, you probably kind of bring her into the fold as one of the protectors of Gotham slash, you know, one of the members of this team trying to clear their names. So while there's names, you know, character-wise, probably not the same characters that you know from the comics. But again, younger audience, maybe you give it a chance and see how it goes. If you've already prejudged the Arrowverse, and I'm not even sure you can call this an Arrowverse show yet, but if you've already prejudged the Arrowverse and you automatically think this isn't going to be for you, then it's probably not. But I'm going to go into this with an open mind and see where this whole thing goes. Because again, the thing that we're starting off with is that Bruce Wayne and Batman are dead. And now we're going to have to just kind of go from there. So how does that whole thing play out? Who ultimately ends up being responsible? When do we find out who's responsible? All of these are questions that we're going to need answers to, and I don't know. And I think depending on when we get those answers, we'll go a lot as to whether or not this show is going to be successful or not. Also want to talk about a new movie that's going to be coming out from 20th Century Studios, going straight to Hulu, and that is The Princess. It'll be out on July the 1st on Hulu. This is starring Joey King, who is an Emmy nominee. You might remember from The Act and The Kissing Booth. And again, not your traditional princess at all. She's strong-willed. She doesn't want to marry the person that her parents have picked out for her. Not atypical of a princess. And, you know, Dominic Cooper kind of plays the villain in this whole thing, kind of plays the, you know, he's the betrothed. Is that the proper term, betrothed? I think it is anyway. And apparently he's a sociopath. And, you know, why would anybody want to marry a sociopath? So they kind of, you know, they lock her up. And guess what? You think she's just going to sit there when she's not the typical princess? No. So she's definitely a little bit crude. She can certainly handle herself. We see her, you know, pretty much beating the hell out of anyone that stands in her way. She's jumping out of windows. She's doing some really, really crazy stuff. So we see some really cool stunts in this trailer. And it looks like she's going to get a little bit of help along the way as well. So, I mean, this one looks like it could be fun. Again, we're not trying to, you know, reinvent anything here. It doesn't look like it doesn't, you know, we're not trying to make things overly complicated. You just want to see a story about a princess who's not your traditional, you know, princess, or certainly a damsel in distress, but a damsel that can put other people in distress, certainly. And, you know, Dominic Cooper's, I think, going to be really fun in a villain role here. He has that kind of charisma about him, and we don't get to see a ton of him in this trailer, but hopefully we get to see more in the next one. But this is one I think could be, has a chance to be really fun, The Princess on Hulu, coming out on July the 1st. This one caught my eye too. There's a new animated series coming to Netflix. Don't have a release date for it yet, but it's called Oni, Thunder God's Tale. Now, this is a very interesting CG animation style. It is not really your traditional CG animation style that you might be used to seeing. And credit for that, obviously, goes to the amazing animation studio, Tonko House Incorporated, that is going to be a part of this. And then you've got Disei Susumi, who's going to be the showrunner for this thing as well. And it's almost like you get a little bit of that, almost, you know, kind of mixing in a peg figure kind of feel, or I don't want to say claymation, because that's not really the best way to describe it, but you've got the animation mixed in with what almost looks like handcrafted elements in this thing, if that makes any sense. Well, you see the trailer, go to downandnerdypodcast.com to see the trailer, and you'll see what I'm talking about. But again, it just feels different. There's a vibrancy to this as well, but it really also, the way that this thing is presented, it really sells the dark fantasy element of the story as well. And the synopsis tells us this is a world that's going to be filled with oddball gods and monsters from Japanese mythology. So that is also something that I think is really, really cool, because we don't get that in a whole lot of stuff. And one of the characters that we'll focus on in this story is Onari, who's basically one of the creature's daughters, who's a free spirit, kind of determined to follow in the footsteps of the heroes, but her powers have not been revealed yet. So, you know, she has to find, there's a fight that to protect the village from these threat of the gods' mysterious enemies, who are the Oni. And we get to see a little bit of that teased in the first look trailer that was released by Netflix this week. It's just, again, any world of dark fantasy, it seems like dark fantasy based on this first look anyway, but this fantasy world looks like it could be very, very intriguing, especially for like a middle grade age. I think that this kind of goes into that wheelhouse a little bit, but if you grew up a fan of fantasy, I think as an adult, you could also kind of morph your way into this, and it seems like really, really enjoy it. Again, this is just a first impression based on the teaser that was sent out, but this is one that I think has a chance to be special if given the opportunity. And you've got some names that jump out in the voice cast that were announced. You've got George Takei that's going to be a part of this. You've also got Craig Robinson, Brittany Ishibashi, who we've had on the show before. You've got Archie Yates, Momona Tamada, and the list goes on and on and on. Again, you want to go to downandnerdypodcast.com for that full list. But I gotta say, again, this is one where I saw the animation style and it immediately grabbed me. So once there's a release date, I'll let you know. Oni Thunder God's Tale, which is going to be coming to Netflix. I wanted to sneak this in too, because I felt like this was an important piece of news that's maybe kind of being lost in the shuffle this week, and that there's a shakeup at Warner Brothers. And of course, you know the Warner Brothers Discovery merger that's just happened, and Toby Emmerich is going to be stepping down as CEO. I'm doing air quotes when I say that, because I'm not sure that this is one that's really his choice. My words, not anybody else's. It just had, you know, when mergers like this happen, if things aren't going well, and usually things aren't going well if there's a merger, then a lot of the executives that are at the top end up leaving either by choice or forced choice. And it just kind of feels like that's kind of where this is headed. Michael DeLuca and Pamela Abdi are going to be co-CEOs. Of course, they were previously at MGM, so Amazon going to have to release them from their contracts. That kind of looks like a done deal. Now, apparently, this is all according to The Hollywood Reporter, by the way. Walter Hamada is going to remain in charge of DC Films in the DC Universe, but reporting right to DeLuca and Abdi. Not necessarily the best sign, right? And then you get this report that Joker director Todd Phillips is being courted by Warner Brothers Discovery as kind of an overall advisor to DC Films and the DC Universe. And here's the deal. It seems like reports are saying that Phillips and the new CEO of Warner Brothers Discovery, David Zaslav, have a good rapport. They get along. So it wouldn't, you know, you want to bring your friends in when you can, right? Or somebody that you get along with to work with. And apparently Zaslav's been talking to Bob Iger and other folks that have worked at Disney about kind of balancing all of these different IPs and film studios and things like that. And how do you kind of build what was built by Disney and Marvel, quite frankly. Now, do I think that they're just going to go ahead and adopt that model? Not necessarily. I think that if they're smart, they still want to give the directors the creative freedom that they've had in past movies. I think that's very attractive to directors too. So I think you want to kind of still do that. But at the same time, they've never really had that figurehead at DC Films that was the Kevin Feige type that you could just trust to make all of the right decisions. Now, some of that's luck and some of that's design, and what percentage you give that is sort of up to you. But at the same time, I think it's very, very interesting that we ended up getting to this point, and that it's kind of taken this long for Toby Emmerich to be ousted by Warner Brothers, and it took a merger. Now, think about it. This is the second merger under Emmerich's watch. First, it was AT&T, now Warner Brothers Discovery. Again, that doesn't exactly scream success when there's been two mergers, two takeovers in the time that you've been there. That should tell you a lot. So whether it's going to be Todd Phillips or whether it's going to be someone else, it looks like they're going to kind of break things up in Warner Brothers Pictures / New Line, and then DC is going to have their own, and then Animation is going to have their own oversight as well. That seems like it's kind of going to be the plan here. And while this Discovery merger does concern me, because I'm not totally sold on the fact that they're willing to spend the money necessary to do what needs to be done, I do think that this is kind of a good step in the right direction. Get some fresh eyes, get some new leadership there. I wouldn't be surprised if we find out that Hamada is out as chief of DC Films not too long from now. Would not shock me if that happens, and especially if they find somebody that they feel like is better for the job. Again, the previous regime's not going to be looked upon too fondly, I think, by this new regime. So this is one that's definitely worth keeping an eye on in the coming months, and certainly for the rest of this year, to see how it plays out, because I wouldn't be surprised if we are not done with these changes for sure. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Down and Nerdy Podcast. Again, very, very important that if you like the show, subscribe to the show. Follow the show, whether it be on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon, Google Podcasts, wherever you like to listen to us, make sure you're following. Share the show. Tell your friends. At a critical point with the podcast right now, I want to make sure that I can still bring you guys the best content possible. And it's very, very important now that you subscribe to the show where you can. And again, this isn't possible without you. You want the show to keep going. You want me to still keep bringing you the same stuff I've been bringing you. Tell your friends to subscribe to the show as well. Listen, interact with me too. I'd love to hear from you, whether it be at downandnerdypodcast.com or on social media at downandnerdy757 on Twitter or on Instagram, and at downandnerdy on Facebook. Going to be running some more contests too. There's going to be stuff that you can win. If you're an existing subscriber, yeah, you're eligible for this thing too. You just have to follow the instructions on how to enter. And there's just one step that you won't have to take if you're already a subscriber, or if you're already a follower on social media. All you got to do is let me know that you want to enter, and then and you're entered, and you'll get extra entries for doing that as well. So some cool stuff that's going to be coming up along the way. And I really, really, again, appreciate your support. Remember, you never have to apologize for being a nerd, so let your fan flag fly and be good to your fellow nerds.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.